Hey, this is Jay Young with King Operating. Have you ever considered paying less money in taxes? Would you like to do what the wealthy do and invest in oil and gas? Go on our website, kingoperating.com, and get my book about our model, ADD, Acquire, Develop, and Divest, or call our number 214-420-3000 to talk to somebody today about investing in oil and gas and saving money on your taxes.
The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey, everybody. Thank you very much for coming today. This is the Jay Young Show, and I'm the CEO, founder of King Operating, but I love having people on that you need to know. Who in this universe do you need to know? Why are they successful? How can I be more like them, right? That's who we have on today, Mr. and Mrs. D Magazine. You know, I know Doug Deason was on the cover, but what a better lovely wife that she should have been on there too. We're going to call on Mr. and Mrs. D Magazine. Jackie Daly, love to have you on today. Jackie just wrote an article called What a Prolonged Shutdown Will Cost in Human Life. And I wanted to know more about that and more about her and what she does. And Doug Deason, I can't introduce really because you're on the magazine. I can't overdo that. But I want to talk. Doug has a lot of things in his heart that he really talks about. And he spends hours and days on. I want to talk about that a little bit. But first, let's go to Jackie. Jackie, tell us about the Jackie Daly Show and also about your article.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jay, for having us on. We are so happy to be with you. Been looking forward to this for a while. So first of all, the Jackie Daly Show is now turning 6 years old on the Blaze Radio Network, which is Glenn Beck's network. And we also broadcast out in the Permian Basin, I think 10 counties in total out there, and podcast everywhere, iHeartRadio, iTunes, most of them. So it's all about energy and environment issues. As you know, we talk about fracking, endangered species, pipelines, anything that's kind of controversial, kind of red meat. So it's not technical or financial too much, right? We don't talk about the newest developments in tubular casings because most of the Glenn Beck audience doesn't know what that is. So we keep it very much for the public, and it's all about making our world accessible and digestible to the average person to help them understand why U.S. oil and gas is critical to their economy, to the country's superpower status, to our well-being, to our way of life. And so that's the mission.
What a big difference this has happened. I mean, I'm sure your phones are blowing up right now and people are like, hey, what's going on? I mean, man, you've got a lot of great contacts out there. What are people talking about right now in the Permian Basin?
Well, staying alive, you know, and so there have been so many really interesting teleforums with the congressmen, with the governor's staff, with industry, and basically people are laying out ideas that might not have been either taken seriously or considered realistic until now. Mm. So, you know, I mean, I'm a free marketer. As a general rule, I would not favor tariffs, as an example, and neither would the people in the Permian Basin, I don't think. But we have a situation right now where we have a self-inflicted wound of economic shutdown. So it's an artificial depression. And then we have Saudi and Russia kicking us while we're down. Okay, so what people have to understand about Saudi Arabia in particular is they're not just an oil buy for us. We have a deal with that country that goes back to the 1930s. Which is essentially, you ensure energy availability for us and work with us on energy. In exchange, we defend your kingdom. That's the deal. They're not helping us right now. They're hurting us right now. And this is not the first time or the second time or the third time or the fourth time. So maybe that deal has reached its natural expiration date. Maybe it reached it years ago. And it's time to tell them, listen, if you want to behave this way, then here's a big fat bill for the defense of your country and maybe even a bill to the, for the past. I mean, I saw a study where if you look at just the years 2000 to 2012, the cost of securing Middle Eastern oil supply. So I'm counting the Iraq war there, because let's be serious. If Iraq weren't on Saudi's border, we wouldn't care. Basically, it was $5 trillion with a T for 12 years. So if you added that onto the cost of every gallon of gasoline, that's $1.20. So when people want to say Saudi Arabia has this cheap oil, they're always talking about the lifting cost. They don't add in the cost of securing that oil. It's huge. Right. American oil is far cheaper for the American taxpayer. It should definitely be what's fueling the American military, which is the largest institutional user of fossil fuels. So what I'm talking about, where I'm going with this, is an America first energy policy. That means we prefer our own. That means that the federal bases, the federal government, military bases, and the states run on American fuel first, where possible, and advantageous for us. And so it means tariffs for others. It also means that we recognize the strategic importance of this commodity, because too often people talk about it like we're talking about oranges or, you know, Jimmy Choo's shoes. No, right. This is a strategic commodity. People fight wars over this. Let's be serious. And so we need to be more honest about it. I think we're at a point right now where people want to be honest about it. And I think also the CFIUS, which is a federal agency overseeing foreign investment in this country, needs to take a look at the foreign ownership of refineries. As you likely know, the Saudis bought the largest refinery we had in this country in Port Arthur, Texas, from Shell in 2017. Well, look, they can prefer whatever oil they want. It's their business, and they can block us out and ensure market for themselves. Okay, if I were them, I'd do the same thing. That's very smart. It's not very smart of us. We need to have refineries that, you know, especially if it's the government being the customer, that says you're going to use American fuel and create American jobs. It's 10 million jobs. Look at the tax base in Texas, the schools that will suffer, all the spending that will suffer. So I make this point on my show. People in the Permian Basin now are being very assertive about this, where in the past, nobody wanted to hear it, you know, because things were fine. We were getting by. There were too many bones buried out in the yard between us and the Saudis, especially among the super majors. It's very complicated, but now's the time to be bold and assert policy ideas that people would not have really countenanced before.
Right. Well, I mean, as we talked about before the show, I mean, you know, you're not only Mrs. D Magazine now, but you're also the first lady of energy, talking about energy. I mean, we're taking all this oil off the market. Rig count's going way down. There's going to be a lot of trouble in the Permian with all these companies. I mean, when do you, can you see what's going to happen 6 months from now, 9 months from now in the Permian? And I mean, the Eagle Ford, the Bakken, I mean, these shale plays are expensive, you know, not only to drill and complete wells, but also they need, you know, break evens of $40, $50 a barrel. Can you see that coming back? Or have you looked at the price of oil, what you feel like the price of oil is going to be by the end of this year or 12 months from now?
Well, what I know for sure is just there's a natural fatigue to the terror of the coronavirus. People are getting fatigued of the talk, of the fear. The more we learn about it, the more knowledge dispels fear. We know now that the fatality rate, Governor Cuomo said, is less than 1% in New York, based on the antibody study. What I'm saying is, our number one problem is coronavirus shutdown for oil and gas, for the demand. That's going to end right away, because people are now past the fear. It all made sense in January when we didn't have any information. All we had is what the Chinese chose to give us. So, of course, there's an overreaction because no one trusts them. Most of what they told us was false. The WHO was wrong for whatever reason. So, basically, it's all going to turn around when this artificial depression is lifted, when we stop fearing coronavirus the way we have. And that was just a natural sequence of events. So we're here now. The problem is, it's already done so much damage. But I really think the smart states are going to turn this around. You see, Texas is opening right away, or partially. We'll see what happens, but we're going to find it's not that bad. We have all the assets we need to address the problem. And so I really believe things are going to rebound dramatically in the next month or two. But that's no consolation for the people who are suffering right now, because it's such a, we're such a quarter by quarter existence here in this country. Whereas, you know, Saudi and Russia and China are on 5-year plans, 100-year plans. There's no short-term thinking there. So I don't mean to trivialize what's happened so far, but it's going to get better.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, do you think, I mean, I just think people are so, they can't wait for the summertime. They're going to go. I mean, I just can't wait to get in my car and just start driving. Right. I mean,
yeah.
In our house with our kids and schooling and trying to work and the whole thing. And then, man, we get out, we're just going to drive. And I think everybody's going to drive like crazy.
You guys are dinner every night.
Get on airplanes or do something. I mean, just, yeah, everybody's tired of staying at home. It's great.
I'm going to do my Joe Biden imitation while you guys are talking, okay? Like the video with he and Hillary Clinton. So watch. I'll.
No.
That'd be funny.
Hey, I'll tell you what. Did you see it the other night? Somebody was walking in the hall. And there was the attic. There's the attic and the string, you know, that comes down from the attic.
Yeah.
And a voice came up there, and it was Joe Biden. He said, "Am I president yet?" And somebody said, no, just stay up there. Just stay up there. Well, it's not November yet. Like,
that's great.
Don't come out. Just stay there.
Yeah, something else.
Wow. Unbelievable. So, you know, Jay, you just wrote the article, you know, what a prolonged shutdown will cost in human life. You've been kind of going over that, right? I mean, what is all this shakeup a year from now? I mean, what is that what your article is about? I mean, I want people to, it was a real world politics, and I know that people need to go and read the whole article, but can you summarize it a little bit?
Yeah, so what happened is I saw an interview with Zeke Emanuel. Zeke Emanuel was one of the architects of Obamacare. And now he's advising Joe Biden. So this guy actually has some influence. He's kind of a big deal. He's Rahm Emanuel's brother. And he said, we have to stay shut down for 12 to 18 months. And we have no choice. His words were no choice. You're not going to see your family. You're not going to go to religious services. See, if you do that, we're going to lose hundreds of thousands of Americans. And I mean, this is a video interview. And he was just saying it with great gravitas and somber. Look, they're grim, you know. So that's outrageous. If we actually took his advice, we would have no economy left. So I decided to try to take the wind out of their sails. What was happening was the closed down people like Zeke Emanuel are saying, you're choosing Wall Street over human life if you want to reopen. Okay, that's a bold, brazen lie. That's a bold, brazen lie. Zeke Emanuel is a doctor. And either it never occurred to him that there would be people die from shutdown, or he's just not being honest. I don't know which. But I pointed out in the article that, in fact, shutdown costs lives. So I start with the research showing that for every 10% jump in unemployment, you have about 30,000 suicides historically.
Wow.
So the Fed was predicting almost a 30% jump in unemployment just by June. Just by June. That's 90,000 suicides.
Mm.
And that's just for 3 months, you know. And then, so I went to the state of Indiana. They have a hotline there for suicidal people and people who are otherwise depressed. They showed after, I think, 2 weeks of shutdown, their calls went from 1,000 calls a day to 25,000 calls a day. Then out in LA, I found this nonprofit that works on suicide. They said their calls went up about 9,000%, corona related. And so then I went through missed cancer diagnoses. So for example, here in Dallas, we had an order from the local authorities and from the governor. If you had an elective procedure, like a cancer screening, those are postponed because they needed the resources for coronavirus. So I received a notice in March, late March, from my mammogram provider that I would not be getting a screening and until further notice. I got a notice from my OB/GYN. I would not be getting my annual screening until further notice. Well, I don't really know what that means, but I began thinking to myself, okay, how many cancers are screened for in the U.S. regularly, and how many cancers are diagnosed? The answer is this. In the United States, we screen for breast cancer, colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, melanoma, and cervical cancer annually, or every 5 years, depending on, you know, the type. Every year, of those five cancers, we get somewhere between 500,000 and 1,000,000 cases every year diagnosed. Okay, so if Zeke Emanuel has his way about it, those people would not find out they had cancer, and their cancer would just progress because you can't get a mammogram in this state right now. So what about those people? Then I talked to my doctor at the Mayo Clinic. He told me that they postponed all of the heart transplants and lung transplants because those are not elective, yet not emergent. So, you know, you're on a list, right? And you're waiting. So those people are not going to get their organs. Then I went to domestic violence. And just here in Dallas, there was a story about the women's shelter run by Paige Blank. And she was saying, look, we've run out of room in 1 week of shutdown. We've run out of room for the women who are being abused at home by the abusers. We're diverting them to hotels because there's nowhere to send them. And then the woman who runs the Cook Children's Center Hospital in Fort Worth said that after 1 week, they had what she called a severe and scary spike in child abuse cases, including death. And she says, you know, these are COVID related. And she said, we knew this would happen, but we didn't know it would happen in 1 week. Okay, that's just Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm sure it's happening everywhere. And these are the most vulnerable people in society. Kids, babies that have nobody to advocate for them. So all I was saying in the article is, what about all these people too? Zeke Emanuel. So I'm responding to him. And then I say, you know, if we reopen, would we get to 2 million deaths like was projected in the beginning? The answer is no. You know, that assumed that we did nothing. Mm-hmm. But now we all know what to do. There was a new Seton Hall poll that came out that says 72% of Americans say they're not going to go to a sporting event until there's a vaccine for COVID-19. Well, I don't feel that way, but that's a huge number. It really shocked me. So the point is, we're not going to return to reckless behavior in the wake of a virus. We're going to behave responsibly, and people should be given the option. So that's really all the op-ed did, was reset the conversation so that no matter which road we choose, opening or closing, human lives will be lost. And we need to be honest about that, weigh them equally on both sides.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I mean, I appreciate that. And I look forward to reading the article and talking more about that, because that is, you know, getting back to what's going to be the new normal. I mean, that's a big question, I know, in everybody's world. And I was talking to somebody today, and they were like, well, what's going to be the new normal? I said, well, when people, you know, they start, yeah, they're going to be real cautious. I mean, Michelle, my wife's talking about, let's don't go to the movie theater, or if we're going to go to a restaurant, let's sit outside. You know, I mean, it's, you know, but once people start doing it, I mean, it's like, you know, when we get back 100%, you know, I think so. There's going to be some people scared. And I think the people that their immune systems, I mean, I'm taking, Michelle, I'm like taking 20 pills a day right now. For this. And I mean, you know, so I'm trying to be as immune as I can, you know, but I need to make sure that my mother-in-law lives with us and has for a few years. And I don't want to take something home, you know, but I'm trying to get as immune as possible, trying to get back to normal with life. And I think that a lot of people will, but there's going to be some people that just, you know, hey, they're going to be more cautious. I mean, you go to Hong Kong right now and not now. A year ago, I've been a couple of times to Hong Kong, and people wear masks over there. They did before all this happened. And I know now you're going to see a lot more of that. And you'll probably see them. I mean, if I was living in New York and I had to go get on a subway to go make money to feed my family, I'd wear a mask and I'd wear gloves. You know, where I've been on subways before in New York, and that's the last thing you thought of was, you know, wearing a mask or anything.
Right.
You know, so. I mean, that's great information. Hey, so Doug, I mean, here you are on the cover of D Magazine, you know, and I don't know why they didn't put Jackie on there. Hill too, or
there's a reason. I was in my jammies when they came for the photo shoot. So
exactly.
My outfit, in fact. So well, I couldn't get there.
Everybody says that about my wife. I mean, hey, it would made the picture a lot more beautiful. But anyway, so you talk about criminal justice in 2012. What got you started on why criminal justice? Man, you can do anything you want, right?
Yeah.
You got good resources to do things and for charities, and you could help animals, you could help, you know, all different types, and which I know you do that as well, but yeah. This is your number one.
Well, I'd say that, you know, I love to fly fish. So I say that, and I say this in speeches all the time, that I would much rather be standing on the North Platte River in Wyoming fly fishing for, you know, giant rainbows than, you know, work meeting with politicians in Austin or Tallahassee, Florida, or Washington, D.C. But it's, you know, it's about giving people second chances. Everybody's made a mistake. Everybody who's listening right now to this show can look back in their lives and spot a time when they made a mistake, and, you know, either they didn't get caught, or they, you know, they got caught but they got out of it, and they didn't get that felony, you know, or that even a misdemeanor for that matter can affect your life, you know, going forward. And so, you know, everything that we do is aimed at, in the criminal justice reform realm, is, you know, we support different groups. I'm on the board of a couple of Right on Crime, which is part of the Texas Public Policy Foundation. I'm on the board of a Lone Star Justice Alliance, which is a little bit more of a left-leaning group that works mainly to divert kids, teenagers, young adults out of the system and into you know, rehabilitation, therapy, foster homes, that kind of thing. And, you know, to me, it's just people make mistakes, and society is too quick to punish and to throw those people away. And what I'm passionate about is giving them that second chance. You know, when they get to prison, 95% of them are going to come out and be our neighbors in the future. So do we want them to go to prison and learn how to become better criminals and more hardened criminals? Or do we want them to go to prison and learn about, you know, our value system? And that they didn't learn probably at home because they didn't have a parent to teach them our collective value system. And so, you know, learn that in prison, learn, you know, a trade that they can go out and make money and be able to rent an apartment and get transportation. And they're just simple things like that. It's so complicated, our system is right now. And then we have all these, you know, laws that people get thrown in prison for that it's just not a good punishment. You know, prisons should serve the purpose of, let's put people there we're scared of, not people we're mad at, if that makes sense. And we put too many people there as punishment. There are other ways to punish people, but there are people we're scared of, you know, who need to be there, and society needs to be protected. And let me say one more thing. Everything that we do, and I spoke at CPAC in February, it was a lot of fun, 15,000 people. And, you know, I said that everyone out in the crowd has made a mistake. I said, you know, that we work on this, on criminal justice reform. The CPAC group, ACU, is very passionate about it. We team a lot with the ACU and Matt Schlapp and his group. But, you know, we always put safety first. It's the most important thing is public safety. So we never want to pass a law to reform the criminal justice system that puts our citizens at risk. And that's what we see too often is there's this push by the left, frankly, to release violent felons, you know, and we're seeing it today. We're seeing it, you know, because of the COVID-19, which certainly prisons are a hot spot, and it can quickly spread because there's no way to social distance there. But we don't need to release violent felons out on the street to protect them from COVID-19.
Right, exactly. I understand that. That's great. So what is, I'm going to ask both of you this question, but what is it that you're going to work on most this year, 2020? I know this pandemic is unprecedented times, and there's a lot of, I mean, we're going a lot of different directions, but what is your number one goal this year?
You want to start?
Your charity.
Sure. Yeah, so politically, I'm not going to share that because, you know, the Jackie Daly Show is nonpartisan. But we have some big goals politically because we do that on the side, fundraisers here at the house and otherwise. And so that will occupy a lot of time, this being an election year. But otherwise, I'm working on really expanding the reach of the Jackie Daly Show. So in addition to what I told you about being on The Blaze and being on iHeartRadio podcast, iTunes podcast, we're going to try to expand our reach so we hit more ears this year. And right. It's not, you know, it's not a nonprofit. I mean, it's a for-profit show, but really I view it as mission work. I mean, I feel like the whole reason I'm here doing the show is because I was on Capitol Hill for 7 years and I did a lot of counterterrorism investigations. Terrorism funding is mostly oil money from the Middle East and North Africa. And so whatever I can do to benefit American oil and gas producers and take money out of those people's hands, I'm going to do it. And so that's why I do the show. And so for me, it's an act of patriotism. It's also my mission work.
Yeah, that's great. That is very good. How do you increase your exposure on your show? Are you going to be in different markets other than just Midland? Are you looking to expand that or be a syndicate show or something? Or
so I mean, technically, I'm on Glenn Beck, and that's an international audience because it's online. Which is interesting because we have a map of the world inside the studio. We can see where people are listening. And like, you know, we'll have like 4 listeners in Djibouti, in Africa. Like, wow, that's interesting. They're U.S. military, you know, people who are deployed. But also, the people write to me from all over the world. It's amazing because in the English-speaking world, a lot of those countries don't have a media offering that is not hardcore socialist or left. They don't have, we have media here divided in half. A lot of countries don't have that. There's one viewpoint. So they look to American media for everything in terms of freedom loving thought, you know. Right. But my audience is largely the United States. And so there's plenty of that here. But what I'd like to do is roll out on the dial in other cities. So I'm always looking for sponsors to do that. I used to be in Dallas and San Antonio. And then when the oil price went down, back in, you know, 2014 to 16, I lost those because it was expensive, frankly. So I could get those back, but it's also social media and I'm doing a ton of speaking engagements. Like I'm writing a lot more op-eds and what happens is I get invitations like yours. I mean, this week, I think I was on 4 shows, Phoenix, Chicago, elsewhere. So those are audiences that are kind of new for me. And so the more I can speak, the better off the show will be. It's better profile.
Right, just getting that exposure out there and getting to new markets and finding that deal. That's great. That is wonderful. That's good. Good for you. Good for you. I don't have 2 people on the show normally. I think my first show ever. This is show number 52. But my first show was about and I had a duo on there. So I hate to go to Doug now because Jackie, I don't want you to think that I'm not thinking about you. And
not at all.
I'm not. Okay. All right.
We've known each other longer.
Yeah. We have. So Doug, what is your goal this year? What can we look forward to reading about Mr. and Mrs. D magazine in the 2020
right.
goals?
I think your listeners might see is the thing that's common between us and what we try to do is it's based on liberty, right? It's liberty. She wants liberty for the United States from, you know, dependence on foreign oil. But that's really what everything we do is about liberty, about individual liberty, about getting power away from the federal government to the states. We spend, you know, quite a bit of time on that. We're in the White House quite often together and separately advising on, you know, criminal justice reform, on energy policy, environmental policy, you know, a lot of different things. What I'll be working on this year, obviously, is we'll continue to work with the White House and with Congress on expanding the First Step Act. We passed it in finally at the end of 2018. We've spent most of 2019 making sure that the First Step was implemented, that the Bureau of Prisons implemented that particular law. And then working with the states. I've done a lot in Florida recently and I've joined was appointed to a board there to kind of advise the Governor Ron DeSantis and the legislature on criminal justice reform and prison reform bills, laws that we might pass, and you know, bring a perspective from another state. In Texas, you know, I worked with the governor and with the legislature on criminal justice reform bills. We passed quite a few. We didn't have a very good session in 19. We have a session coming up in 21. And, you know, the priorities there, and I've talked to the governor about this multiple times, we're on the same page, and that is on bail reform, which we have to get bail reform done. The Supreme Court has ruled that our bail system is illegal because it's based on financial ability to pay, which is, you know, essentially a debtor's prison. If you can't pay to get out of jail, then guess what? You sit in jail after you've been arrested. So there are, you know, easily 2,000 to 3,000 people at any given time sitting in loose stare at jail in Dallas County who are there simply because they can't afford to pay bail. So we've got to get that fixed. You know, we're also looking at civil asset forfeiture right now. DAs, and this is true at county level and state level and federal level, in most states at least, and but the federal level, that there's a conviction is not required to be able to take the assets of someone charged with a crime. They don't even have to be charged with a crime necessarily. And the office, the prosecutor can take the assets, sell them, and use the money for whatever they see fit. And it's literally Dallas County uses, their budget is supplemented by about $8 million a year by money, assets that are confiscated and sold. You know, most of the time without a conviction, and a lot of times they're not convicted, and now they've got to go sue the county to get the money. The asset's already gone. I had a friend who had an airplane sold, and the airplane's gone. That's how he made a living as a pilot, and he was innocent. They dropped the charges, and he had to go sue. And this is actually a federal deal. But so we're going to work on that, and then we're going to work on a grand jury reform. Texas is unique in a lot of ways, most of them good. But in Texas, a grand jury can grand jury shop without any new evidence. They can, and that's how Ken Paxton got indicted. You know, it took five attempts to indict him, twice in Austin, once in Dallas County, and then twice in Collin County. They finally got indictment the fifth time with no new evidence. And that should be illegal. It should not be allowed. Most states bar it. Texas allows it, so we're going to work, you know, and of course you have the opposition groups that always fight you, the bond industry, bail bond industry, you know, they fight bail reform, which is stupid because they're going to lose anyway, no matter what they're going to lose. We could cut a deal with them to where they didn't lose as big, but they don't have the vision to see that. You know, and then the prosecutors and district attorneys and county attorneys fight us on bail reform. And on civil asset forfeiture, sheriff's associations aren't particularly fond of the, and the police associations. Now, we do have some sheriffs, some prosecutors, some DAs who are for these reforms, and you know they're great allies. But it'll be a battle. We'll get bail reform passed this session. I feel confident. It'll take a lot of work. I go down every week during session, and we have meetings. We spend a lot of time, effort, money to do this. Build a team.
Yeah, great. That's great, and I appreciate that. I think you were going down there one time when we sat on the Southwest Airlines
plane. Right, exactly.
Austin one time. I was going down there for something else, but
yeah,
I saw you guys and sat with you and enjoyed that.
So, exactly. So,
Jackie, what would you tell? You had a lot of success, a good journey. I mean, you know, on your life, lawyer, your own radio show, been back. I mean, what would you tell somebody right now, 22 years old, getting out of school, you know, or maybe somebody before they get out of school, you know, what is some of the most important things that I'm not saying that you didn't do, maybe you did do these. So I know Doug didn't do them, but we'll talk about that in just a second. But what are some of the things that you wish you'd have done or you would have done better?
One thing I wish I would have done is join the U.S. military. I actually regret, and Doug does too, never having served, not only because you could say you did. I mean, I served on Capitol Hill as a lawyer, but it's not the same. There's also a lot of benefits that come from being in the military. you know, whether it's like GI Bill, healthcare benefits. If you make a career of it, you can retire at age 38 and then double dip and have a second career. Oh my gosh, I'm 43 years old. I could have done that. I could have already done that. So sometimes things like that were regrets maybe, but really the better answer to your question is the attitudes that lead you to win. Number one, there's very little competition for hard work. And there's no substitute for hard work. There are people who succeed without it, but they are rare and they are weak. They can be taken down by people who have paid their dues. So work hard and learn to love working hard. Yeah. Work something you love. If you choose something you love, you never get to work a day in your life. I love what I do. I can't imagine what I'd rather be doing other than like being a rock star. Yes, if I could trade lives with Mick Jagger, I would do it. But short of that, I love what I do. I think you have to believe in yourself no matter what. Never, ever be discouraged. Always persevere. I don't care what happens. Never give up. Never give up. You're not giving up till you're dead. They had to kill you to stop you. You know, who's going to stop you? That's your attitude. If you want something and it's good and it's right, then you cannot be discouraged. And I mean, you should know, Jay, that I came from a very humble background. So, you know, I'm the first in my line of women to not be a teenage mother. I'm the first in my family on either side to graduate from college. So, you know, I came from Appalachia. Technically, I grew up below the poverty line. I had no role models except for the lawyers in town who were, you know, friends of mine. But I always gravitated to the highest challenge I could find. Unafraid of failure. You know, I always imagine what's the worst. And I thought if I get up to a high challenge and I get knocked down, I'm still higher than where I started. So right. I always want to make sure the decisions I make don't shut doors behind me. I can't stand that. I want to keep as many doors open as possible and go as high as I can and be okay with failing. Failing is American, right? I mean, if you got a petroleum club, right? Like, if you haven't gone bankrupt at least once, people don't even appreciate you. They don't respect you, right? You haven't been knocked down and got back up. So you have to be kind of fearless. I mean, you have to believe that God put you on the planet for a reason. You're not an accident. You have a purpose. You have talents. And the book says you have to find out what those are and use them for good reasons. And, you know, God has a mission for you. So don't let anyone stop you from accomplishing that mission. It's got to happen.
Well, I can see why Doug was very attracted to you. You know, I can see that, man. I tell you what, that's awesome. That's great. So what, is there an entrepreneur that you admired the most, or a book that you read, or, I mean, they don't teach this stuff at school, right? I mean, they didn't, Jay, you want to do anything, you know, like that. But I think it's very, I admire that about you, about military. Do you think we should go to high school and then 2 years of military, or do you think after school or, yeah. You know, yeah. I think that'd be great. I think because I was interviewing Pastor Graham last week, and he talked about, I said, how do you build your people? What's the most important thing? And I said, what do you teach them? And he said, character. Right. You know, and I think a lot of character is built in the military, obviously, and all that. So is there an entrepreneur or a book that you read that really kind of helped you? What helped you get there?
Well, for me, I mean, Grandpa was a preacher, so I read the Bible, you know, a lot. And there's tons of adversity in the Bible and stories of people overcoming it. You know, they're the flawed people who never have the best in anything. They're not the smartest, the fastest, but God makes them and uses them to be the one who saves the people in the Old Testament and the New Testament. There's a lot of it. Beyond that, though, there's a really cool book by T. Boone Pickens called The First Billion is the Hardest. And I love it. I love it. It's funny. It's witty. It's true. It's biographical, autobiographical. And what's interesting is he documents in the book his religious upbringing and to teach him how to think about the world. And then he fails. He succeeds big and he fails big. And he succeeds big and he fails big. And he talks about his competitors. And he's like, you know what? So I have to resurrect myself again. And he put together this plan. He had a great plan. And he's like, I went all over America talking to the biggest oil companies saying, I have a plan. And they would like fall asleep in the middle of his presentation in the boardroom. Or he said, they'd look at me like they'd sooner have a root canal than have to listen to me. And he's like, you know, 6 weeks later, guess what? They're executing my plan. And he goes through kind of how life can be, you know. Yeah. And I just really appreciate his humor. He laughs through all of it. You know, he's an upbeat guy. He's a funny guy. You have to have humor as a coping yeah. tool, you know, and to make life better. And so I just enjoy it. So we just lost him, as you know, last year. And I never actually got to meet him, believe it or not. I know his team, all of them. And I was an admirer from afar. But I'll tell you a funny story. I invited him on my show. I've never said this before publicly. I invited him on the show. He turns me down. And I'd explained to some people, you know, why this is such a great idea to have an energy show and what the mission was. Guess what? 6 weeks later, he had his own podcast. And guess what else? Every guest that he booked had been on my show.
Oh, my gosh.
One Man. Of my friends. So
no royalty for you, huh? Just a little.
No royalty. But it was like, you know, he did that. And then I read his book. And I'm like, holy cow.
Wow.
So anyway, I really, really liked him. I read the book now. I'll pick it up once in a while, read a chapter for fun. So if you're young and you want a good attitude about how to, you know, navigate whitewater rafting of life, I don't know, metaphorically. Right. T. Boone knows how.
He grew up poor. I mean, no question about it. No question about it. So, Doug, what about you? What entrepreneur or book or putting you on the right path?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I, you know, obviously wish that I had joined the military. And I actually, after I graduated college, University of Arkansas.
Your wife said that. You can't jump on the back of that.
No, but we talk about this all the time.
You owe your credit to your wife, right?
Hey, okay. I got my great ideas. She's my inspiration.
There you go.
I really do. Really did. I tried to, as a matter of fact, what I refused to do is walk into that recruiting center because I've never seen anybody walk in and walk out unrecruited. So I would call and I would say, hey, if I come in, you know, I have a degree in data processing, quantitative analysis. Can I enter officers training school? And they said, well, you'll just have to come in. We'll have to talk, see your degree. I'm like, no, I'm not going in because I won't come out. I said, the only way I'm going to do this is if, and I never got anybody to agree ahead of time that, yes, I qualified as an officer, which frankly was their mistake, I think. But I wish I had been in the military, joined the military, you know, and got picked up that discipline, that character. And I think that's what I would recommend anyone do coming out of college. I've tried to recommend it to both. I've recommended it to both of my kids, and they're not. They're going straight into the business world. So my son's already there. My daughter's about to go. But they're both pretty disciplined, I think. Boone was a big inspiration for me as well. He and I were, you know, I was pretty close with him. We were out at his ranch. It was supposed to be with him the weekend before he died. And, Jay Rosser, his right-hand guy, chief of staff, he'd flown out and just Boone really didn't know where he was, put him on the airplane and sent him back to Dallas. And then we flew out. We were at a wedding in Charlottesville, Virginia. So we flew out the next day, and Boone wasn't there. And then anyhow, he died on Wednesday night, I believe it was. So Boone was always a real inspiration to me. I loved him, loved meeting with him, loved spending time with him. He was one of a kind.
Yeah, he was. Very, very nice guy.
Yeah.
I jumped on his plane. It was landed in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
Right.
I'd flown up there in a little King Air to go to his golf tournament, the annual golf tournament at Oklahoma State.
Right.
Kirsten Creek. And my buddy knew his pilot, so we got on the plane and just looked around. We, you know, it was his chair and his wife, Madeline's chair, and this was years ago. And right beside his chair was about that thick, and he was writing the book. It was like the manuscript, all the pages. I looked at it, I go, oh my gosh. I said, hey, do you mind if I take a picture of that? And that guy goes, no. You can't take a picture, but that was the,
that's funny
right there. And he was writing that book, and everybody came out. I got a copy and all that stuff. But
right,
I mean, you know, guys like that just, you know, they give it their all. I mean, they feel like that. Hey, you know what? They believe in it. They put their money where their mouth is. They go after it 100%, and it's just an exciting. It's exciting to hang out with people like that.
It really is. Yeah. His cowboy. So we had suites in a suite, cowboy suite in the owner's club, four down from Jerry, and he was a couple outside of us. He split it with Alan at the time, with Alan White at Plains Capital Bank. So I see Boone quad, you know, all the time, and we'd always go over there, and yeah, you know, we had politicians, he had politicians, so we'd, you know, take ours over to see him. They'd bring theirs over to see us, and you know, a lot of times we'd say, hey, we're doing, you know, we're buying a bank. Do you want to, you know, we'd love to have you in our bank. And you know, it'd be, Doug, I know one thing, and that's oil and gas. He said, I put all my money in what I know, oil and gas. And, you know, he pretty much did. I invested in a restaurant or two, but generally he was not interested in investing in anything outside of oil and gas.
Yeah, man, he was definitely a legend, and I know that we'll all miss him. I know that I told him one time, I said, he goes, when did you graduate from Oklahoma State? And I said, well, Mr. Biggins, I didn't graduate from Oklahoma State. Friends of mine did, and I'm a big supporter, you know, of the and sponsor teams.
Right.
He said, hey, if you donate enough money, he said, we'll get you a degree. You don't worry about that, sir. You know? Always with a laugh, always.
Yeah.
Just a great guy. Great guy.
Yeah. Well, we have Jay Young, the next Boone Pickens. So Texas is blessed.
Hey, man, we got to tell you what, it's a ride in the old business right now. We're very excited about it. And we're gonna pick up some great assets, and we're gonna value add. And hey, it's a cycle, right? I mean, ups and downs. And
yeah,
I wrote the book, The Upside of Oil and Gas Investing, and I've sent you guys copies. And there couldn't have been a better title, The Upside.
I mean, right.
There's not much upside than -$30 oil, right? So, man, we're good there. We are very good there.
Yeah.
Hey, so. Is there anything else what else is on your mind? Is there anything right now that's kind of come to the surface since we started talking?
No, not really. I think that, you know, obviously we're dealing with this virus right now. I think that I think most of the country has been, I know Jackie has been really impressed with the president and the way that this administration has handled it. You know, he's an amazing man because he's got everybody taking pot shots at him, right? He has the mainstream media uniformly united against him with the Democrat Party. The Democrats, instead of jumping on board and trying to be, you know, help out and help the American people, all they can do is shoot and point, you know, shoot bullets at him, point fingers at him, you know, blame him. You know, they don't want any part of it. They're, you know, Congress is staying home. I mean, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing the way they treat him, and it's amazing what he gets done despite all the hurdles they put in front of him. I mean, he's done more than any president in our lifetimes, more than unbelievably President Reagan. You know, certainly, I mean, Obama didn't do anything, but a lot more than Obama. And he's just an amazing man, and we're so blessed to have him. I think that our governor's done a good job of you know, allowing. We're a large, diverse state, and what's good for Dallas is not necessarily good for, you know, Marfa, right? So let the locals decide how to handle things. I think he's done a really good job with that. I think I have been particularly impressed with, unfortunately, with our county. They call them county judges. It's a Texas thing that I still don't understand, but the head of the county is called a county judge, but, you know, he's not a judge. And then we have our mayor, and our mayor has been really, I think, impressive with the way he's handled it. I think it was up to the mayor. The mayor would have given people more discretion to, you know, to quarantine, self-quarantine, and to, you know, practice safe social distancing, that kind of thing. You know, we have this big overreaction by our counties, and a lot of the county urban county judges have done that, And it's I think that's probably cost Texas a lot. But yeah, we'll make it back. We're getting opened up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Partially. We'll get opened up even more in the middle of May. And yeah, should be full bore in June, and I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Hey, so Jackie, let me ask you this: what if there was a high school student that came up to you at a Starbucks and y'all just became friends in the Starbucks line, and she said, "Jackie, I don't know what I want to do with my life." What would you tell her?
Okay, so up until very recently, what I would have told her I would have done at that age is go straight to Midland and get a job driving a truck, you know, after right earning my CDL in what is it, just a few weeks, a matter of weeks, I can be making up to six figures if I'm willing to show up every day on time and pass a drug test. I mean, up until recently, the oil patch really, really needed people. They couldn't keep enough people at work in the blue collar jobs, welding, things like that. So looking back, my goodness, you're young, you're healthy, you have no expenses, you have no kids, you have no health problems, you have no dependents. You know, go out there, make money, develop some character, learn how to show up every day on time, which a lot of people can't do, you know, and you're golden. I mean, you're way ahead of the game. You've got college money. You don't have to worry about it. Or, like I said, join the military. You know, you get to travel the world. You get to learn how to be part of a team that's bigger than yourself. And I just think so many kids, especially now, are just not disciplined. They're not independent. And the military will do for them, frankly, what their parents didn't do. You know, right. I just think that we would all be better off if there were a program like the Israelis have to put you into a service at that young age. But, you know, I guess I feel like too many people rush into college because they've been told it's the only path. It's not the only path. A lot of kids get there. They don't know what they want to do. They're only 18, and they burn a lot of time taking classes they'll never use for a degree they'll never earn because they'll change their mind. You know, if you're not sure what you want to do, you need to just get hands-on doing something that interests you and figure out, is this what I want to do with my life? If you don't know, I mean, a lot of parents don't like my advice, but I think it's okay if you don't want to go to college right away. You know, you're going to live to be 100 with medical technology progressing the way it is. You've got some time to figure this out. I went straight to college because I had a full scholarship academic to Marshall University, Society of Jaeger Scholars. So that was a good decision for me because I had the money in hand. And I knew I was going to law school. So I had to get through that first step. But for other people, there's nothing wrong with working with your hands. I mean, the country needs a whole lot of blue-collar people. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can always change your mind later. You're not dead yet. You know, I always say if I could write an autobiography, it would be titled, I'm Not Dead Yet, because I can always change my mind. I can always correct course. I can always make things better.
Right.
I can always get up and dust myself off. Have 9 lives, at least.
Yeah. Well, some of the best entrepreneurs we know, and Bill Gates and Facebook guys, I mean, they didn't finish college, so
right.
And I mean, they got a few bucks between them, so you know.
Yeah.
Doug, anything you want to add at the very end?
Nope.
Are you good?
That's good. We're really honored to be on your show.
Well, I tell you what, I admire both of you, and I'm so glad to have both of you on at the same time. I really do appreciate that, and I tell you what, I really enjoyed getting to know both of you, you know, a little bit better. I know Doug for a long time, and I just really, man, you guys seem happy, and I know you got you're both sound like you're very strong in your beliefs and what you want to do, and I really look forward to watching you guys, you know, grow and help other people, because I know that's a big part of who you are and what you want, and I really, really appreciate you having on, and if you want to know more about Jackie Daly, the Jackie Daly Show, I'm sure they can just Google Jackie Daly, I'm sure you can just Google JackieDaly.com, and it's not with an E, it's J-A-C-K-I,
yes,
without an E, and then Daily, D-A-I-L-Y, Jackie Daly, Mrs. D Magazine. and Doug is, you know, he's more private, but behind the scenes, I mean, he's out there and he's Mar-a-Lago. He's at the White House. He knows all the Trumps, and he is supporting so many different, you know, groups that do so many great things, every year and every day. And Doug, man, we really do appreciate. I mean, we know you can do anything, you know, with the resources that you have, and we really appreciate you, you know, taking time and effort and supporting so many different groups that, man, it's so important to you and it's so important to everybody and doing that. Thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you, Jack.
And thanks for being on. And we hope to, this is the Jay Young Show. And I want everybody to, you know, subscribe to the Facebook or the YouTube or the whatever. And also come on in and tell me, I don't think I can have better guests than the Mr. and Mrs. D Magazine. But if there is somebody that you'd like for me to interview, that you're saying that they'll be number two behind this beautiful couple here, who would it be? Tell me that. Tell me everything. Tell me what's going on in your life. We appreciate that. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.